Welcome to Blackhawks Insider, the official podcast of the Chicago Blackhawks, presented by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Drive what Kane and Taves drive. I'm Carter Baum, and coming up on this week's episode, we dive into the strong finish heading into the All-Star break for the Blackhawks, winning 11 of their last 16 games, including 5 straight before Tuesday's loss to the Panthers. We'll talk about Patrick Kane's 1,000 points and the on-ice ceremony before Tuesday's game, the return of Joel Quenneville to the United Center, as well as a look into, as fast as heard, the Blackhawks' original feature about Kendall Coyne, and we'll talk to Eric Lear about what goes into a project like that and more coming up on Blackhawks Insider, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. It's all about the drive.
Hey Blackhawks fans, your local Chevy dealers have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for you. Take your best shot to win the 2020 Chicago Blackhawks Custom Blazer. It's a one-of-a-kind performance machine with its custom Blackhawks leather interior and Chicago skyline grille. You can't win if you don't enter, so go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and register right now. You must be 18 years or older to enter. Someone's got to win, so it might as well be you. Go for it. Drive what Kane and Taves drive.
Welcome into Blackhawks Insider. Carter Baum joined by Adam Burrish, Chris Cook, and one of the originals making his return to Blackhawks Insider, Eric Lear, joining us this week, who is a member of the first few episodes that we did this season, has had other priorities take over his time, and so we're glad to have you back, Eric.
You told me you kicked him out.
That was between us.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry. Conflicting reports.
They always come
into
back.
The Blackhawks, yeah. Either way, I've been welcomed back. The door's been open, so happy to be back.
Door's been open. We'll talk to Eric a little later on about the Kendall Coyne documentary that came out earlier today on Wednesday. As fast as her, we spoke with Kendall, gentleman, last week. A great conversation with her, but I thought it'd be a little cool to get the other side of the story, because this has been something that's been in the works for quite literally a year. So we'll dive into that later on. But first and foremost, happy All-Star break. Happy bye week. There are now 8 days without a Blackhawks practice. And I'd venture to say that not many of the Blackhawks players are still in the city of Chicago right now. A well-deserved break after a hectic start to the season, including a very good stretch. Over the last few weeks, they've won 11 of their last 16 games. They had a 5-game winning streak going into last night's game against Florida, a 4-3 loss to the Panthers, who were on a 5-game winning streak of their own. That's no bad loss there. I mean, those are two very good teams that kind of duked it out on the United Center ice. But we talked a little bit about it last week. Things are trending well, and the team, as it stands right now, into the break, 3 points out of wild card spot, I think 4 points out of even the third place in the division, if you want to bypass the wild card race. I mean, Chris Cook, you wrote something earlier this week that this team is right in the thick of it based on their play of late.
Yeah, most people had them buried, right? Can't make the playoffs. Let's look for a draft pick and talk about next season. And they've really turned things around, and you just look at a couple of factors. Obviously, the goaltending's been great all season long with Robin Leonard and then Corey Crawford. But to me, it's the penalty kill, right? Last season, I think they finished 29th. Right now, they're tied for fourth or in fourth place by itself. That, to me, is a huge turnaround. You're talking about a special teams, Burr. You know that one of the special teams goals can really turn a game around. So I think some credit to Stan Bowman there for bringing in some guys, Ryan Carpenter and Kelvin Hahn before he's injured, and other guys who've come in and stepped up on a penalty kill. And I think your best penalty kill has been Robin Leonard and Corey Crawford. Leonard, I thought the other night, was terrific on the kill. So that's been a big difference. And this team's got a lot of confidence. And you talk to the guys, and you know, before, when they kind of sheepishly, yeah, we want to make a run for the playoffs. Yeah. They made that run. That run's been made. You've got to keep it going here. And I'm just kind of, Burr, I want to get your thoughts on this break now. I was almost kind of like, boy, tough time for the break as you're rolling, right? But you talk to the players, and they're pretty much all looking forward to some time off.
Yeah, I think when you go on a run, when you're winning 5 in a row or 6 in a row or 6 of 7, it's hard. You know, you're grinding to get those wins every night, and after you put 2 or 3 together, you put some pressure on yourself, like, we've got to keep this going. But you can see yourself climbing in the standings and getting higher and higher, and I think it was a good time for a break. I think I can tell you from a player, when you have these breaks, You want to finish either personally doing really well, having a couple points, couple goals, or having your team doing really well so that when you come back, you know, your coach isn't going to be like, all right, we got to get back into it. We haven't been playing well. We got to get back to a fast start. Where these guys can now leave, they can go sit on a beach somewhere and feel good about the work that they've done the last 2 or 3 weeks, got themselves back in the hunt. And I'm with you, Chris. This was a team that, I, to be honest with you, a month ago, if somebody were to say, would you bet this team makes the playoffs? So you put all your money on it. Oh, God, I don't know if I could have. And
not Burr's
now,
money, no.
No, well, yeah, it wouldn't be much. Now I think it's a real conversation. They can keep playing, and this penalty kill's been great. Imagine if this power play was doing what it did last year. They're in the playoffs if this power play's doing it with the team that, if you're being fair to, has struggled a bit defensively still. But their penalty kill's been great, and their superstars have been great, and their goaltending's been great. So, man, if this power play can get clipping too, they're back in the hunt.
You mentioned one point about individual players feeling good about their games going into the break. I think that's why Kirby Dach's game last night was perfect for him. He broke a 13-game goalless skid, added an assist, a terrific goal in the backhand. He was really happy and confident in the room afterwards, saying, yeah, this is really good for me, and I'm going to go home now and watch my brother. He said his brother's got a couple of home games. Yep. He's going to hang out with him. But he's got, 10 days or whatever to sit here and think about, I'm coming off a really good performance. Now I can kind of reset here and really take off.
Yeah, he can go home now. You know, is Kirby Dach playing in the NHL guy and have a little bit of confidence and feel good about his game. I think for him, he's a guy, he expects to have those kind of games. He puts the pressure on himself. I want to deliver. I want to score every night. I want to contribute every night. And he's had some stretches that I think he's been playing well. He just hasn't been getting the points and hasn't been producing the score sheet. But going home now for him as an 18-year-old kid after having a two-point game. 19, having a great game. He's going to feel good about it. Now he can come back to that first practice when the break is done, when you are a little nervous because, as weird as it sounds as a professional player, when you don't skate for 8 days, your timing's off. It is a little weird. It feels like your first day back in school, and he's going to be able to come back and feel, I feel pretty good about
it. I was
going to
ask you about that. I think I saw somewhere Michael Frolik is on his break right now, and he's out there, and he rented some ice, and he's out there, you know, bag skating himself. Did you guys do any of that?
No.
Throw the skates in the trunk.
What were you doing on the break?
Maybe you would, tell everybody, I've been working out in the gym. I was having a pina colada on a beach somewhere.
A two-point night from Kirby Dach, as we mentioned, on his 19th birthday. Very Patrick Kane-esque goal as well, walking down the wing and firing a backhander top corner, basically the only part of the net he had it. It might have even been a little bit of a bar down, a glance off the crossbar. But a two-game point streak for him, he's starting to feel the confidence. And you add that to the group that we talked about last week. Jonathan Toews is still flying. He's 1 point away from hitting 800 in his career. Patrick Kane hit his 1,000-point milestone on Sunday night. You have Dominic Kubalik, who still is just continuing to fly. He had one game where he didn't get a point, and he's right back to it on Sunday night. I mean, the offensive weapons are going. You mentioned the goaltending. You have Robin Lehner, who, by his own words, had a rough game against the Florida Panthers. He was upset about that, but it was kind of the one time all year where the rest of his teammates and Jeremy Colleton were like, he can have a night off. Like, he's deserved that with some of the games he's had this season so far. Corey Crawford, 2 wins in his back-to-back starts last week, including another big win in Montreal. I mean, Eric, you were on that 3-game road trip through Eastern Canada. I mean, that's a big 6 points coming on the road like that, even though maybe some of those teams are at the bottom of the standings.
And I know there was a lot of disappointment in that homestand. There was that 4-game homestand leading into that trip. The 2 games in the middle were tough losses. Got a win against Anaheim on that Saturday before the team took the road, and then to sweep that I thought was huge. To get 4 straight wins, you beat an Ottawa team that is probably a team that you should have beaten, but those other 2 games are pretty tough, and Toronto's always a fun matchup whenever the Blackhawks and the Maple Leafs meet up. But I thought that trip was huge to go out there to keep that good momentum going. Unfortunately, a tough loss last night heading into the break, but I just thought that trip was so important. Corey Crawford was always great in Montreal. He was great on that trip. Just overall, very clutch road trip by the Blackhawks.
And just to give our listeners an idea, and Eric's talking here, you want a good perspective on the mood of the guys and how happy and how loose they are. Eric's probably a really good guy to ask, because when you're watching on TV at home and you see the media scrum, once that's done, now Eric on the day off or right after, might have to pull that guy and say, hey, we got to film some content piece for the website right now.
I got to bug you right now.
Can we ask a favor of you to record this or do that? And when things are going good or not, you get a pretty good beat on what the mood's like, and you are on that trip, and it seemed like it's been pretty good the last few weeks.
It's been fantastic. I mean, it usually is. The guys are great in this locker room to work with, but everybody's a little more willing to smile when I walk up and ask them to do something in the locker room after a few wins. So everybody was riding high on that trip, and it was a lot of fun to be on and to keep the wins going.
We should do a segment on what you've heard when they're not going well.
Yeah.
If, I don't know if we could air it, though, but maybe after the podcast
might
is
have
over.
To slip out of the room here again.
Yeah.
Corey Crawford going back to Montreal. I want to touch on that for a second. He's lights out in Montreal, his hometown. A 6-0-2 record, a 1.12 goals against average, and a .971 save percentage. The highest of any goalie to play at least seven games in Montreal all time. I mean,
that's not an easy place to play.
It's not an easy place to play. And there's especially for a goalie, it's easy to have a night off here or there. And I mean, Montreal's a team you face on the road once a year. So that's 7 years of his career, at least, that he's been able to put up strong performances like that. That's consistency that you never see every single year, night in and night out, when you're in an opposing city, to just have that dominance.
And go back and look at the game. Remember that first dump in too? The first
White
play
House.
He makes on the game. Toe picks behind the net. Looked like he hit his head maybe, or who knows what. Got up slowly, so not the great start. But you're right, it's not an easy building to play in. It was one of my favorite buildings to play in, but probably the most uncomfortable I was every game. It's a big building. The stands kind of go straight up all around this huge big bowl. They're chanting. It was uncomfortable. It was so cool. I think you get wrapped up in the history there and what's going on, and you're looking around and the chants. I always felt a little bit like like I was in a video game playing in that building. And I never had, even as a team, I don't think I won a lot of games there. And you go there once a year, so you never get familiar with it. The one thing I liked about it is they got really good hot dogs there. And after the game, they bring in this massive box of hot dogs. And so everybody's just crushing hot dogs in the locker room.
They're known for their press box hot dogs.
They bring those down.
Had more than 40 or 50, but they're excellent. They're pressed and they're hard
to
describe.
They got a piece of bread almost, kind of real thin bread.
I'm not comfortable passing along how many of those I had last week.
We'll get to those stats later on, don't worry. A great road trip that was wrapped in Toronto with Patrick Kane getting his 999th career point. There was a moment there where I was almost fearful that 1,000 would come on an empty netter or something late in the game. It was shaping up to be one of those games. Because he got it early. He got that 999th point in the first period. And at that point, it was kind of like, all right, this is going to happen tonight. Here we go. And as the game went on, it was kind of like, don't do this on bad empty netter. But we saw on Sunday he got it with the secondary assist on a Brandon Saad goal at the United Center. A really cool moment. The entire team comes off the bench, mugs him in the corner. He started a celebration basically on the dot and was pressed against the glass by the end of it because he had so many teammates mobbing him. It wasn't necessarily a pretty assist. It was a good teamwork goal with the secondary assist, but you could tell he wanted to kind of get that over with. He was kind of maybe holding the stick a little tight, had some moments in that game where you could see he was maybe trying to do a little too much and do it himself. But an awesome moment for him on Sunday at home in front of the United Center crowd.
Keep it alive, Kane down low. Saturday, touch pass. Check the Golden Jet and Savoie Faire on a very short list.
We've all seen a lot of hockey games, and sometimes, as much as fans don't want to hear it, but not, you know, sometimes not every game is the most exciting, yeah. and especially when you're working up there. But when that happened, when all those teammates came out and mugged him in the corner, I had chills. And I'm thinking, boy, I've seen 1,000 hockey games. That was a really fun moment. And you don't get too many of those. And then, bang, we had it back-to-back with the two presentations last night with Joel Quenneville returning and celebrating Patrick's 1,000 point. Really fun times at the United Center. And the energy level was great. And it really kind of energized me. I'm sure the players are feeling the same.
Yeah, we were kind of thinking, because he knows exactly where he is in the standings. He knows everything. He knows every little stat Kaner does. And I was thinking, well, God, maybe he is really going to push and get this at Hockey Night in Canada in Toronto. But then
you called it last week. You said, I think he's going to do it on Saturday night.
Yeah, and all of us
teed up, right?
Yep. We all were like, selfishly, I want to see this at home so we can be there, we can see it. And I was thinking back, I don't think I've ever played in a hockey game where the entire bench comes out in the middle of the game for a celebration. And then I had heard, I thought it was pretty cool that Jonathan Toews actually asked the referees if this happens tonight, is it okay if we all come on the ice and get to celebrate with Patrick? This has happened, 91 times in the 90s?
He was the 90th,
In the history of the world, this has happened 91 times. And the ref said, yeah, of course, get out there and do it. And so that's kind of how that happened. But I've never seen that before, but I think that's a special moment that deserves that. And that was, I'm with you. I had chills watching that too.
Yeah, credit the Jets, you know, for not having a problem with it. Credit the referees and the fans for recognizing how big a moment that was.
I think it's amazing when you look at the history of this franchise. I'm kind of been wrapped up in the top 10 list, top 10 points, top 10 goals as of late. And you look at the current guys who we've seen in this uniform for a long time, maybe taking a little bit for granted just how good these guys are. Kane now fourth behind Mikita, Hull, and Savard in points in this franchise. It's incredible. Toews is sixth, and Keith moved into 10th. I mean, it's just amazing to think all the players that played here, all the Hall of Famer level talent that have been here, to see these guys putting up the numbers that they are. It's pretty fascinating to be able to watch it.
And a really cool moment on Tuesday night in the pregame ceremony when, you know, Kane's family is on the ice. His parents weren't able to be in Toronto if it had happened there, and they also weren't able to be at the United Center.
So that's why he didn't do it.
They had gone to London when the Knights retired his jersey. I think it was because of a snowstorm. They were not able to get to Toronto for the game on Saturday night. So they went back to Buffalo, also because of a snowstorm. When it didn't happen in Toronto, they were unable to get from Buffalo to Chicago. So they weren't in the building when it happened on Sunday. Chris, you were in the locker room before the game yesterday or after morning skate when Kane was talking about, you know, it sucked that they weren't there, but he said it was almost cool for his dad to experience it from a different angle, to see all the coverage of it, to see all the interviews and the post-game reactions and everything, to be able to experience it from that angle. And then the family was in town for the on-ice celebration on Tuesday, a great moment. And Jill Mikita, Stan Mikita's wife, the late Stan Mikita's wife, on the ice presenting him with Tiffany Crystal plaque from the NHL, Dennis Savard, his first NHL coach, and one of the other three members of the Blackhawks to score 1,000 points in a Blackhawks sweater on the ice with him. Just a really cool moment to just see those three standing on the carpet together represented 75% of the people who've done this in the entire almost 100-year history of this organization. So a really cool kind of surreal moment just to see that and to see the celebration. And I think it was at least 90 seconds straight that the fans were applauding him. And, you know, he was trying to like wave it off and be like, all right, you know, this is done. And you could kind of see where a smile came across his face. And he was like, God, you know, it's unreal. It's incredible to watch and think about and also kind of appreciate the history that you're seeing right there in front of you.
And I know that he appreciates the history of the organization. And on that night, Dennis Savard, his first coach, he loved Savvy. And Savvy, he always talks about how Savvy was a good mentor to him and kind of let him play his style because he played like Savvy, taking chances offensively, and Savvy kind of helped mold him into that. And then, you know, and then also to have the other coach that he won three Stanley Cups with, the two coaches that I know mean so much to him. It was perfect timing, and it was almost like he knew that, like, he knew this was going to be a special moment, and He had a, it was almost like he planned it that way, right? I'm going to do it at home. Quinville's coming in. The presentation's there. Savvy will come down.
You see
down.
Him there in September, you know, with a with a whiteboard up on the wall. He's like, all right, so if I do this many in this game, you know, line
did he plan the snowstorm
here?
Too, though?
Yeah,
is that,
right. But it was just special. I mean, you know that that really meant a lot to him. And that was, as a teammate of his, and I can, you know, speak for all of his teammates, that was pretty special.
It was fun to see his family out there because his father doesn't like to fly. That's why he couldn't make it in.
Yep.
And it's really remarkable to see, you go on the road sometimes and you see his dad there. It's like, boy, how'd you get here? It's like, I drove 12 hours, you know?
Yeah.
So they couldn't make the drive. But to see his family out there, and then I think one of the TV cameras caught Joe Quenneville looking up and watching the video of Patrick Kane's milestone goals, and he had a smile on his face like everybody else in the arena did.
Yep.
It was really fun.
He was a fan.
Yeah.
Q was a fan for a little bit there, too, and neat how they obviously and deservingly honored him, too.
Before we'll talk about Q in a second, but I do want to point out that I love the fact that Pat Kane Sr. came out, you know, he's not a dad who's, you know, in a suit or dressed up.
No.
He's wearing a full jersey, and on the back of the jersey, it's got 88 on the sleeves, it's got Kane on the name bar, and it's got 1,000 on the back of the jersey where the number should be, you know,
cool.
A special made jersey. I'm sure he might have had some help from some of the guys downstairs, but a really cool moment from him. And then, Burr, you mentioned it all, and Chris, you as well. It all happened on the night that Joel Quenneville making his return to the United Center. Great video played during the first TV timeout. Another incredible moment by the referees who paused the game for a little bit coming out of the TV timeout as the entire United Center on its feet and chanting Q and applauding. And, you know, we heard from Quenneville before the game saying this is really a moment for him to be able to say thank you to the fans as much as it is for them to say thank you to him. And it was a cool moment, almost a full circle moment for not only the fans, but also Joel.
Joel talked, and I thought he said one thing I thought was very interesting. He said, you know, the way it ended, I could have been bitter, right? I could have had negative feelings here. But when that video started playing and those fans started cheering, you realize I didn't have any of that. I felt everything positive. And that, to me, is really a testament to kind of how the fans loved him and how he loved Chicago, how the team loved him afterward. He was talking out in the hallway with Taves and Keith and Kane and Seabrook, and Dale Talon was there, former general manager of the Blackhawks. A cool moment to watch that as well. But I'm really happy that Joel Quenneville, that's why he got the win, being with the Blackhawks. But it was so nice to see him get kind of what he deserved for everything he gave for this team.
Yeah, you're dead on, Chris. And I think it's he realizes, like, I don't need to be bitter. I think he really genuinely appreciates being a Blackhawk, you know, for a long time and winning 3 Stanley Cups, and appreciates the organization. And I'm with you. It's easy to look at the negative side, and I think it's pretty neat that he even acknowledged that I got nothing to be bitter about. I got to coach at, in my mind, the best organization in hockey and win 3 Stanley Cups here, and he's a legend here forever. And it's pretty neat that he mentioned that. But don't forget, he wanted to win that game more than any game of the season. And I can tell you with Joel, and I was watching, when it's a must-win game or he really wants to win from the start of the game, he's vocal on the bench. His matchups, like, he might have 3 different lines called and say, Chris, you're going here. Carter, you're up. If Taves line go up, Carter, you're going. And then Adam, if the Kane line goes, you're going here. And so everybody on the bench, you've got to be a little more active. You've got to be listening from the start of the game. And if it's a, you know, if it's a normal Tuesday game, he may just kind of let the game play out. And as the game goes on, he may get a little more vocal and get his matchups going. But you knew it was an important game when the puck dropped and Joel immediately was like, all right, here's the matchup. So you got to go here. Adam, you're going now. Chris, you're going here. Carter, you're going next. Here you go, blah, blah, blah. And that's how it looked to me from the bench that he was dialed into this one. This was one that he definitely wanted to win.
He coached that like a playoff game. I was talking to
George
Richards of The Athletic, who's covered the Panthers for a long time. He said that Joel actually changed the way he's been coaching this season. He usually says that when Bobrovsky's in the net, he lets these guys just go ahead and fire up and down the ice. But he kind of played a defensive style. He clogged the middle. And the Blackhawks couldn't get any shots through. They played a defensive style that George hadn't seen all season long, and I was thinking, boy, Joel really was playing a playoff kind of game, and it paid off as they won 4-3.
Well, and he knows firsthand the talent of guys like Jonathan Taves and Patrick Kane on the other side. I mean, if anyone knows how to maybe thwart those two, it's Joel Quenneville for coaching him for 10 years. But what I also want to bring up, you know, what could have been maybe a little bit of an awkward moment for Jeremy Colliton, who's now in charge of the Blackhawks, and we talk about, you know, the recognition due for Quenneville with the fans and all of that. it could have been a very awkward position for him to be in, but he said it very plainly right after morning skate and said, you know, the fans are going to give him a standing ovation, and as well they should. You know, he's done a lot here. He, you know, Colleton was the first one to kind of step up and say, absolutely, like, he deserves this. Yeah. Like, he didn't make it an awkward situation, because I think everyone in that situation understands the magnitude of Joel Quenneville, but also the current state of both of these franchises, and both of them coming in on 5-game winning streaks. I mean, both of them are doing quite well right now.
I would say since the day Jeremy got here, I it's been amazing how he's handled that. That's a brutal thing to step into. That's brutally hard, and you're going to get a lot of questions. And his demeanor is perfect, a perfect guy to step into that situation. He's calm. He kind of sticks to what he knows. He sticks to what he thinks is right. And I really do tip my cap to him, because since day one till that game yesterday, he handled it like an absolute pro, class act. And I can tell you, as a player and a guy that's in the league, you, like you said, I give the Jets a lot of credit when they were cool with everybody. You recognize history, and you recognize Hall of Famers when you see them, and when you know a guy, Joel Quenneville, will be in the Hall of Fame. Step aside and give them their moment and learn from them, and Jeremy's done an amazing, amazing job of that.
Think about having to come in really on short notice like that, the youngest coach in the NHL. If you had no NHL coaching experience, you're taking over for a legend in the coaching ranks. And Jeremy is a very level-headed guy, which I found to be the case over the last year or so. Really knows his place, very confident in what he does, knows what he doesn't know, which is, I think, is important. He listens to his coaches. But, yeah, he acknowledged that, you know, what Joel did here. And he said, one of the reasons I came to the Blackhawks organization, he said, I was doing great in Europe, is because Joel Quenneville was there, you know, and Jeremy started in the AHL. So I was able to learn from him, and I wish I had more time to learn from him, basically. But he found himself in the situation that a lot of guys wouldn't have been able to kind of come through there. So I really admire the way he handled it. And, yeah, he faced questions. Guys saying, hey, you know, everybody's going to cheer in Joel Quenneville. How do you feel? He said, I feel fine about it. He said, I know where I am. I know where Joel is. He deserves it. And we're going to go out and win the hockey game. They didn't win the hockey game, but they've got this team going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. It was a 0-0 game through the first period. The Blackhawks go down 3-0. They fight back and make it a 4-3 game. I mean, it was a very entertaining game late in that one. And you almost had the feeling of, these guys are going to do it again. Another three-goal comeback, another whatever. But, I mean, it was a very similar to a playoff atmosphere. I mean, the fans were into it. You know, they had moments where they were cheering for Q and almost somewhat cheering for the other side. Yeah. But also, you know, when it got interesting late, I mean, they were on their feet. They were loud. Really a great way to kind of head into the break. Everyone can kind of get a rest. You have some injuries that I think this time is going to be really good for. Guys like, you know, Dylan Strome to kind of get over that last little hump. Even Brandon Saad, who just came back, you know, get him even better than maybe where he is right now. You know, 2 goals in his first 2 games coming back. You know, he's doing okay. But this break, I think, is going to be really good for everyone, and the key is going to be keeping that momentum on the other side of it, which will be very important.
It wasn't the worst loss, right? I mean, losses are. I mean, it wasn't like that Blues game where they gave it up in the third period. You played a very good team that was coming in on the 5-game winning streak. You've been playing very well. You had one bad period. The second period, they just got loose defensively, and a couple of pucks that I think Leonard normally had stopped all season long, and he didn't. And after the game, he copped to it, said, "Yeah, I need to be better. We win that game if I'm better." So it's not like you go into the break going, oh, geez, we just got hammered and we didn't have any life. It was a really fun hockey game and a good hockey game. So I think you feel good about it.
And I think that was the mood in the locker room afterwards. Yeah. Everyone was kind of, it was one game.
Can't win them all,
but
basically.
But we're doing good, and everyone was still holding that confidence. It wasn't the same feeling that maybe you had earlier in the year. It was like, I don't even know what happened out there. I don't know who that team was. But a really good way to wrap up a little over the first half. Well-deserved break for everyone. And you know, I think it's a well-deserved break for a lot of us in the room, too. You know, we get a little bit of downtime.
Break from each other, I think, is what it is.
Yeah. You get time off? I didn't get that memo.
I must have got lost in the outbox. Okay.
I'm going to talk to Adam about that.
We'll make sure it somewhere along the way gets there. But we're going to bring Eric Lear fully into the conversation now, talking about As Fast As Her. We previewed it, as I mentioned, last week during the show, talked to Kendall Coyne, got her incredible side of it and just what she's doing for the women's game in general. But Eric, I know this has been a passion project for you and for one other important person over literally the last year, basically since this moment happened at the skills competition a year ago, what kind of led to that? What was the passion behind this project and telling this story? Because, I mean, I know you've done a lot of work with Kendall through the years and her work with the Blackhawks, but to really kind of tell her story and how she's helping the next generation, just like Cameron Granato helped her.
Well, what's kind of crazy is we had this idea before the All-Star game even happened. Mm-hmm. She's been so involved in the Blackhawks, in the community, in youth hockey camps, and just being a role model for the game before any of that happened, that we had worked with her, like you mentioned, that it's like, yeah, she'd be a good person to kind of check in, like, do a little profile on and see what happens. I mentioned that to the other person you mentioned, Spencer Wade, who did a phenomenal job on this project. And she was like, oh, man, if we do that, like, I want in. I want in on that. So we were discussing it two conventions ago. I think we first chatted about it and then just kind of kept thinking about it throughout the year, the years. And then when the All-Star game happened, we were like, oh, this is next level. This is a game changer. This has totally changed kind of maybe her platform and also what we can do from a storytelling standpoint. So it really evolved from there and just how amazing of a person she is to be playing as well as she is, but also finding time to give back and to make sure that women's hockey is a better place for the next generation than it was for her, much like you mentioned Cammy did for Kendall.
I know behind the scenes, maybe not everyone realizes the planning and the time that goes into something. I mean, it's an 18-minute documentary. It's not a 90-minute feature film, but just the amount of work that went into those 18 minutes, you guys are sitting at the draft, the Blackhawks draft Kirby Doc in June. You use that time to also go out and get that interview with Cameron Granato. I mean, that's how far back some of these shoots and interviews and everything was taking place. I mean, you're recording with Kendall Coyne throughout the summer, kind of during some downtime and getting some of those on-ice shots of her skating around Fifth Third Arena. How much work goes into this over the entire year? I mean, I know we talked about it's a passion project, but there's a lot that goes into anything that's produced like this, especially something as long as this documentary.
Yeah, it's a beast. It's a beast of a project. And one of the harder parts of doing that is trimming it down. We have terabytes and terabytes of footage to try to trim down.
What's
into
a terabyte?
It's something that you get at the restaurant when you're hungry. Yeah, you grab
like an appetizer.
It's a pterodactyl.
A lot of footage to the layperson. So that's definitely a challenge. But yeah, I mean, we started in earnest production in the spring last year. We went out to follow her around at NHL Network. She was on a panel at the ESPNW Summit in Brooklyn. We shot a ton with her over the summer at all these camps, and it's the amount of interviews. I mean, we had to take a break in her interview. It was almost 2 hours long. Same thing with Cammy. We talked with her in Vancouver for a long time. So it's basically a constant project with all the other videos content that we're working on. It was something that Spencer and I were always in contact talking about, planning, having meetings, reviewing cuts, reviewing interviews, going through transcripts. And again, a big shout out to her. I don't know if she's worked on a whole lot else in the last, especially the last 7-8 months, just because it's been such a beast of a project for her to edit and for us to review and go over. But obviously we're super proud with how it turned out, and all that time is very worth it to tell Kendall's story.
What was your favorite moment, maybe behind the scenes, or what sticks out to you during this entire process as just something that's surreal for you?
I think it was just cool to get to know like what she was up against, what she's fighting for. I mean, I haven't been super exposed to being in a world that isn't you don't have the representation. You know, she's fighting to be visible so that young girls can see someone on TV, on national TV, doing this. So I think I knew this was an important story before we started, but I don't think I really knew how important it was until we started to get into it. We went to the ESPNW Summit in Brooklyn, and you hear all of these dominant female athletes talk about the fight that they're up against to try to have a sustainable sport. I don't think that's something that I fully realized. So I thought that was really meaningful to kind of sit back and see, yeah, Kendall Coyne's winning gold medals. She's skating as fast as anybody I've seen around a rink, but she's doing it with this weight on her shoulders of being visible. and trying to represent an entire sport. And I think that really just says a lot about the type of person she is to be able to dominate the way that she is with all of that kind of weighing on her.
I know personally when you guys do these things, it's always, you know, there's edits and there's more edits. And then there's talking to Kendall, who is the feature in it. And it's collaborative, and you guys will say, what do you want to get across here? What's the message we're going for here? What's the look we're going for here? Are you good with this? You probably already answered some of it, but what was the main thing that she wanted to push in this? What was she most interested in? Because when we talked to her last week, I wanted to hear about the skating and how she had no warm-up and she didn't know she was going to do it, but she almost kind of downplays that. And she doesn't, that wasn't the focus of this whole thing.
And I think what's cool about that moment is that she even says, well, that wasn't about me skating.
It was about
a woman, a dominant woman, a female hockey player being in that moment and performing well, that it wasn't like, look what I did. It was like, look what we did. And I thought that is really selfless of her to say. But in an almost 2-hour interview, the only time she got emotional is when we were talking about the next generation, future hockey players, young girls, who maybe don't know that this is something that they can pursue because they don't see it. They see Patrick Kane and they don't know that they can, they can do it. So I thought that was probably the most powerful thing that we caught from her, was that how much she really cares about the next generation and making, hockey in general more accessible to anyone that wants to play, particularly people that aren't represented as much. I thought that just, really resonated with Spencer and I quite a bit as we were kind of diving into where the story was going to go.
So you put in what years basically starting in on this, and I know you're doing your regular thing too. You're traveling with the team. You're doing the locker room interviews. Every time I come in the office, which is sporadic, oh, Eric's here again. That's odd, you know. But so when you see this final product and you see people react, and we sat in a conference room and watched it, and I was looking around the room and it was, I was engrossed in it. People are engrossed in it. People are crying. You know, I mean, when you see that, you see the reaction and you hear what people are saying about it, where's the pride level in the work that you've done?
I mean, it's huge. It's huge. I mean, Spencer and I are super proud of how it turned out. I think if we had 6 more months, we would love to keep doing, you know, keep tweaking it and adding more. And, you know, we could have made a full length feature if we, you know, had the time. But I mean, I think we're very proud of it. I think it's, we're proud of, you know, pretty much every video we produce in the first place, but this one's just different. I mean, it just has a different feel. It can reach a different audience that I think is an important audience to reach and for them to see this. So, I mean, we're super proud of it, and we just hope that everyone out there can find some time to take a look at it and hope they like it as well.
Where can everyone see it?
So blackhawks.com/fastisher. We'll have it. It's also on the Blackhawks YouTube page, so youtube.com/blackhawks. A few different ways you can see it. So either one will work.
Nice.
And it'll also be shown on NBC Sports Chicago at 3 different times this week, starting tonight, Wednesday night, 10:30 Central, tomorrow, Thursday night, 7 p.m. Central, and then on Saturday at 5:30 p.m. Central, as well as I believe NBC Sports National is going to play a small portion of it during some of their All-Star coverage this weekend.
Yeah, Friday. Kendall's involved in a legacy event at the All-Star game on Thursday, so they're going to capture some stuff with her, and then they're going to play a 2-minute portion of this Friday during their All-Star game, kind of pregame skills coverage, which is amazing. Also, NHL Network time is to be determined right now, but you can check blackhawks.com/fastisher. We'll update that with all that information. So kind of cool to see a lot of people in the hockey world interested in this and wanting to get more eyeballs on it. Really special. Billie Jean King was involved in this.
I was going to say, even outside the hockey world, like Billie Jean King is a pretty big name to have kind of backing this project and really invested in it.
An absolute legend. I mean, literally changed the game. Obviously changed the games in so many ways. So to have her interviewed in this and her support behind it is amazing. Kendall's teammates, a lot of people that we've worked with, talked to, and know Kendall, are really happy that the Blackhawks produced something like this. And we were happy that Kendall trusted us to tell her story.
You get a break now? You taking an All-Star break?
What's next, Eric? Let's hear it.
My boss is in the room, so if we can move the microphone over, see if I get a couple days off, that would be great. I mean, I want to start part two right now. I want to keep the Blackhawks original series is, like I said, it's a beast to produce, but we love it. I mean, it's long form, and it's telling stories, and that's what we like to do in this business, and is tell stories. And Kendall had a great one, so now it's, you know, maybe I'll take a few days over the weekend, and then come back and figure out what's next.
Can I make a suggestion?
You can.
Right here, Adam Burrish, the Adam Burrish story.
You want us to follow you around for a year?
Make this about me again.
You get a good four or five minute documentary out of that.
I think 3 days in, you'd be like, all right, nice to see you. Yeah. Hit the road, man.
Well, for those that don't know, the Blackhawks original kind of umbrella oversees a lot of stuff. I mean, you guys did a full kind of feature on Adam Boqvist and his time with the London Knights over a year ago and kind of that story, as well as everything that kind of falls under the on-the-clock umbrella and kind of going behind the scenes throughout the entire scouting, combine, draft lottery, NHL draft process. I mean, these are some really deep, you know, full-length films that take you where no one else can, literally no one else can take you.
Yeah, and that's really fun. It all started with On the Clock, the draft series, when we hosted the draft here in Chicago. And I mentioned my boss, Adam Kempinar, and Jay Blunk, and everyone said, well, this is big. This is huge. There's the draft, a marquee event coming to Chicago. How can we show people what it's like? So when that got brought to us from Adam Kempinar, we were like, this is huge. Like, this is what we want to do. This is fun. It's a beast to do that a little bit more because it's generally 2, 3, 4, 10 minute episodes within the span of a month, a couple months. So that's this was nice because we did have some time, the As Fast As Her, that is, because we did have a little more time to really think about it, cut it, talk over ins and outs of every single bite placement. With On the Clock, sometimes it's like, we gotta get this thing out. So it started with that, and then once after that first year, it was really well received. We've still done that now, three seasons of On the Clock, but we were like, let's tell more stories like this. This is what people want. This is what we have the skill, Blackhawks TV, in producing, is telling those stories. So we picked that up from there and started doing more individual profiles. One on Dylan Sekura, signing Sekura, was a really fun one where we got to show kind of a unique story in hockey where you can be playing college hockey on a Monday and you can be playing in the NHL on Thursday. I mean, you don't see that in any other sport. So we kind of dove into that, and Dylan at Northeastern, which was a lot of fun. And we realized how much fun we have with these. So we're just kind of looking for great stories like that to keep pursuing. And Kendall was a no-brainer for us.
And I know the next, at least project or projects, are at least in the story development phase. So some exciting stuff to keep coming there. For full coverage, it's blackhawks.com/fastasher. You can watch the full film as well as the information about where it's airing on TV, the different stuff that Kendall's doing within the community, how you can get your son or daughter involved in Blackhawks youth hockey, and all kinds of great stuff. Blackhawks.com/fastasher. And I mean, we want to know what you thought about it. I mean, send an email to insider@blackhawks.com with what this means to you, what you thought about it, how terrible of a job Eric Lear did specifically on it.
It was all Spencer.
whatever you want. We want to hear what you thought about it. But Eric, great job. And I mean, we all mentioned it last week to Kendall, but a really great motivational piece and inspirational piece for not only the girls' game, but also hockey and people that love sports in general. So a really great product there. And thanks for giving us another angle and behind the scenes look at it here today and joining us.
Yeah, happy to be back. And if you don't know who Kendall is, or you know a little bit about Kendall, you're like, oh, she skated the lap. Like, definitely, she's an amazing person.
Yeah,
and we got to know her very, very well in this process. She's not only one of the best hockey players in the world, but a great person with a great family who we got to know. So I'd highly recommend it. Even if you're a casual observer or don't know who she is, it's a great person to know and learn more about.
She's just like an open book and so lively and outgoing all the time. A great person. Just kind of backing up what you said, but that'll do it for this week's episode, guys. Eric, thanks for joining us once again. For Chris Cook and Adam Burrish, I'm Carter Baum. We'll be back next week towards the tail end of the bye week, kind of teeing up as the Blackhawks hit into a very crucial stretch in February with 11 of 14 games on the road that will largely decide where this team goes this season and whether a playoff run is in the cards. So it's going to be an interesting few weeks. We'll be back next week, but until then, we'll see you next time on Blackhawks Insider, presented by Chevy Drive Chicago. Drive what Kane and Taves drive.